Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning on this Friday, and our subject today is entitled Understanding the Spiritual Mandate and Necessity of Temptation. Through the show, I would like to clear up an understanding. It is an understanding of the definition of temptation and tested. These are two different words in the Greek text, and I know they are used interchangeably, but these words have very different meanings that are very important for us to understand. Also, we are going to take a look at the term tested in the Hebrew text of Genesis chapter 22, verse 1. But before we go there, let me talk about the term temptation and why it is important to understand its meaning for one's spiritual life. We have to note what the book of James teaches about the term temptation. And so, having said that, I'm going to be reading from James chapter 1, beginning at verse 12, which reads, "Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him." And so, this is a very important verse. And the verses that immediately follow verse 12. We shall get into those in a moment. But let me point out a few things here. First, we have the adjective blessed at the beginning of verse 12. And then we have the article that modifies the noun man. And in the Greek text, the word is not anthropos. Anthropos in the Greek New Testament is gender inclusive. That is, it means both male and female. But here the term is aner, A-N-E-R, and it specifically refers to the male or men. So blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, please note, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life. So the term temptation is a noun. And in the Greek text, the term tried is an adjective. When he is tried, he shall receive, future middle, the crown of life. So, first of all, let's take a look at the term endureth. And birth is a compound word in the Greek. That is, it has the prefix upo, which is a Greek preposition which means under. Upo means to remain or to stay. And so it means to remain or to stay under. Then we have the noun N-E-I, from the term meno, which means, so we have to remain or to stay under. And so, hupomeno. This is a term that has been translated as endure. And the term temptation for us here in the Greek is the term parasmon. This is a very important word because parasmon or parasmos means, well, the meaning depends on who tempts. If it is God, it is for the purpose of proving someone and never for the purpose of causing him to fall. Now, if it is the devil, or the term, from the term diabolos, which means one who divides, the one who divides. The term devil is an adjective, and it speaks of an activity, of a behavioral mandate, one who divides people for no reason. And so, if it is the devil, it has an altogether, this term means something different. Then this term, parasmos, or parasmon, is for the purpose of causing an individual to fall. So this term is from the Attic Greek, and it is important to understand it. Now, we also have the term tried. It is the Greek term dokimazo, which means to discern or to distinguish. This term has for its meaning trial or proof. And so dokimazo means to prove or bring forth the good in us or to make us good. Romans 2:18, Romans 12:2, 1 Corinthians 11:28. Now, this is in contrast to parezo or paresmon, which means to tempt, or which means to discover what is good or evil in us. So that is my short definition to these two very important Greek terms. So now notice, once again, blessed is a man who that endureth temptation, that is to remain under temptation. When he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life. The important thing with regard to temptation is to understand the divine purpose in the midst of a very serious event or series of events or a very serious set of circumstances that is now within the life of the individual. But in order to understand this term temptation in more depth, we have to read on. So let us do that. Verse 13, let no man say when he is tempted. Now notice the language, it is very important. The syntax is very important. Understanding, reading with understanding is very important. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. James goes on after the colon, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts he any man. And so the first part that we need to understand about verse 13 is this declaration. And the negative declaration that states that God tempted me. God does not do such a thing. We're going to go on and get more into the psychology of temptation in a moment. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts he any man. So, I want to bring out another term in the Greek text. It is the term kakon. It is also an adjective, It is a term that is translated evil. Kakon is, there are two terms in Greek for it that has been translated into the English. There is Kakon or Kakos, and there's one which means one who is content to perish in his own corruption. He does not attempt to drag others down with him. And so this man is a malignancy to himself. And then there's another Greek word that is translated as evil, and it means one who is not content to perish in his own corruption, but one who wishes also to bring down others with him. And so in verse 13, we have the first Greek word, kakon, that is one who is content to perish in his own corruption. So God does not tempt, God cannot be tempted with evil. The devil found this out in the temptation event of the Christ. So we read that at the beginning of the Synoptic Gospels, that the Christ was cast out into the wilderness. And Luke uses the preposition hupo, that is to be tempted under the devil. He was placed under the devil, and he was tempted, and so therefore this was a very powerful term that Luke uses. And Jesus was ministered to by the power of the Spirit. Now notice, the temptation event occurred after he was baptized with the Spirit. And then after that event, he goes and he is tempted under the devil. So we have a model provided for you and me. That is, to be full of the Spirit. To be filled with the Spirit. The word to be, the term spirit filled does not mean, the word pictures is not that of a bottle or glass being filled up. It is control of the personality. It is the giving over of the volition or the will to his dunamis or the power of God. It is relinquishing one's own control in order to produce the fruit of the Spirit within one's personality. And notice, it all begins with the volitional act. Jesus has provided a model for us. And so the temptation is a model. Notice, he was Spirit-filled. He was Spirit-controlled. Within his personality, the fruit we have, the fruit of the Spirit at work. And so he was prepared for this very strategic engagement. He was prepared. And so in Genesis 3, the first Adam failed. He failed fearfully, knowingly. It was open rebellion against the known will of God. And so it was parabasis. It was a fearful transgression. He sinned against knowledge, divinely provided knowledge. He sinned knowingly against the divine and the mandates of the divine imperative. And so he was incredibly responsible for the events that took place in Genesis 3. The second Adam, so spirit, when he confronted the devil, that is, the one who divides for no reason, the term that is used in the Hebrew in Genesis 3 is the term Nakash, and it means the shining one, the shining one. His glibness with words is his adroit skill, his adroitness with words and reasoning totally destroyed the woman. And in Hebrew, there's a sense that we are coming in upon this, upon a conversation that should have never taken place. She was totally out of her league. And thus we read, she was thoroughly and completely deceived. But not so the man. Let me read on. In verse 14. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. The word for own is idios, epithumias. Epithumias means all types of lust. It is an old term. It has been outmoded by many, but it has a contemporary or an astonishing contemporary relevance. It is highly relevant. So many today are perishing under or because of a particular lust or a gnawing desire. We use the term addiction. The term addiction is not a scientific term. It may be used clinically or within a clinical context, but it is not a clinical term. It is not a medical term. It is not even a scientific term. It is a definition that we give to behaviors that are self-destructive in nature. The addiction. Now, in Luke chapter 4, there's a very interesting term that is used by Jesus in the Greek, and which I have adopted for my definition of addiction. And in the Greek, it means to be taken at the point of a spear, that is, to be taken in war. At the point of a spear, it is translated as the term captives. Captives. These persons who are in the addictive spiral or in the addiction spiral are captives to their lusts. It takes, and please read Galatians chapter 6, and in Galatians 6, Paul talks about negative spiritual psychology of the flesh. He talks about the pathology of the flesh. He talks about the etiology of the flesh and what it does to the individual. And also in Galatians 5, Paul talks about, Galatians 5, he talks about the flesh. He also talks about the fruit of the Spirit, the power of the fruit of the Spirit. But notice here, but every man is tempted, and so he uses the state of being verb, is tempted, when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. The word enticed here means to capture or to seize. It even means arrest the individual is he is drawn away of his own lust, and then he is enticed. Now, beneath this language is an activity of the will. The will is being shaped in a or moved in a particular direction. The will takes that direction. And please note that as this spiritual transformation is taking place within the heart toward this negative direction, please note that a parallel event is occurring in the body. That is, in the brain, in the heart. And so synapses are being fired in a particular direction, are making new synaptic connections. That is, neurophysiologically, the individual is being changed. The brain is being changed. The emotions are being changed and are moving toward a particular direction. Now, this is on the physiological level, and on the anatomical level, structurally, the physiological level for activity. And so there is an astonishing emotional commitment in that is taking place within the individual, spiritually, anatomically, and physiologically, and emotionally. The individual is being turned into a particular direction. Now, this is a powerful truth with regard to temptation. Jesus said that you have heard that it was said by the Lord, thou shalt not commit adultery. Jesus said, but I say unto you, he takes it from the very act to the thought. So the thought life is engaged by Jesus. To gaze on a woman, Jesus said, in a particular way, one has already committed adultery with her in his heart. You see? And so, hence the mandate to understand temptation, what it means, and how we must address temptation in our lives. James lays out for us what happens spiritually or what goes on spiritually. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then, verse 15, when the lust hath conceived, the epithumia hath conceived. Now, we have here the term that means to arrest, conceived. It bringeth forth sin. Sin, the term here for sin is harmatia. And we go on, and sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. Now, let me make a correction. Verse 14, the word enticed means to entrap and delude. In verse 15, the term conceived means to clasp or to capture. So I want to make that correction at this point. Now, when lust hath conceived, and notice a picture. Notice the word picture that is being used, pregnancy. When lust hath conceived, it brings forth death, sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Do not err, my beloved brethren. So here, James has laid out for us the source of what happens with regard to temptation. It's in the heart. It begins within the individual. And so we have to decide about what happens in our hearts, whether we would be led astray or whether we will follow the word of God. Now, it is important and imperative that we understand what is going on in our own hearts. Now, I said that I wanted to get to Genesis chapter 22, verse 1, and so I'm going to briefly take a look at that this morning. Genesis 22:1 reads, "Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, 'Abraham, here am I,' he replied." So this has to do, verse 2, God said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there, the burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." And so we read, we go to verse 9. "He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood." So that is at the end of verse 9. And so we call this the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. This extraordinary test, that is, we call it the Akedah, is both present tense and future tense. And Elohim moves into he tears us under the normative reality of Abraham. He seizes Abraham's heart through his son. He has the complete attention of Abraham because of Isaac. This is extraordinary, and it is a very powerful picture of the connection between love and obedience. And so I asked the question, can our normative reality be an idol? Can it be a stumbling block to biblical obedience? You know the narrative. You know what is being taught. You know that Isaac is not. You read in Hebrews 11 that Abraham received him back as through resurrection. So a new relationship came about. So Isaac was to be a living sacrifice, and so are we. Temptation is an extraordinary event that happens in the lives of all believers. And we are to note what James says. We are to note what is written here in Genesis 22 about the Akedah. Please read Hebrews 11 as well. I will do another show on temptation because in the next show we will look into the life of Peter and what happened to him and what changed his life. Good morning once again. My name is Dr. Josiah Rich. Have a wonderful day.